It is just, wow, wild feeling to sit in the pews, and realize that the high school senior walking across that graduation stage is the exact same toddler you used to see just sprinting down the church hallway in light-up
Oh,
sneakers.
yeah, the light-up sneakers. It hits you fast.
It really does. So welcome, everyone, to today's deep dive. This is your personal prep session for our Connect Group meetings this week. We are going to unpack the incredible message our youth pastor, Sean Mullins, just delivered to our Harmony Christian Church family.
And it was a heavy one right out of the gate.
Oh, totally. He unpacked this really uncomfortable truth right off the bat, right? The fact that those seniors are still walking with the Lord, it didn't just happen by accident.
Right. It was formed by years of intentional investment. And Sean anchored the entire morning with a physical demonstration of that reality. He didn't just ask us to think about it conceptually.
No, he had people literally stand up.
Exactly. He said, if you are connected to a student facing a major life transition, a preschooler heading to kindergarten, an eighth grader moving to high school, or one of those graduating seniors, you had to get on your feet.
Yeah, and then he asked the rest of the congregation surrounding those standing individuals to physically reach out and pray over them.
It was incredibly moving.
It visualized the entire thesis of the morning, which is that passing down faith is not an individual sport. It is a community mandate.
100%.
Yeah.
Sean was looking at our entire church family and asking, like, how are we intentionally stepping up for the next generation? Because discipleship isn't a problem relegated to just the parents sitting in the third row.
Right. It's about the whole Harmony community taking ownership of the youth sitting in our sanctuary. But taking that concept from, a beautiful Sunday morning visual to a random Tuesday afternoon reality is where the friction happens.
Yeah, because Tuesday afternoon is messy. And this is why Sean took us straight back to Deuteronomy 6.
Right.
It is one of the foundational texts for the Jewish faith, specifically because it functions as a lifestyle manual, rather than just a Sunday school curriculum.
Yeah, that passage commands believers to talk about God when you sit in your house, when you walk along the road, when you lie down, and when you get up.
Right. And it even mentions binding the words on your forehead and writing them on your doorposts.
Which I gotta say, it prompted Sean's hilarious disclaimer to the youth group.
Oh, that was so fun.
He literally had to pause, look directly at the teenagers, and specifically instruct them not to go around town graffitiing Bible verses on buildings without permission.
A very necessary caveat for high schoolers, for sure.
Totally.
But, underneath the humor, Sean was isolating a profound psychological reality. He was emphasizing that human beings, and especially children, they are wired to model what they see far more heavily than what they are explicitly told.
Right.
Developmentally, kids process nonverbal cues, stress responses, habitual behaviors, as the true indicators of what an adult actually values.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because it's easy to think of teaching faith as just lecturing, but kids are essentially walking security cameras.
That's a great way to put it.
Right. They aren't just logging the polished, scheduled moments when we sit down to do a devotional. They are catching all the behind-the-scenes, unedited footage of how we navigate a Tuesday morning when we're running late.
The panic, the yelling from the kitchen.
Exactly. But let me pause here because I know there are people in our Connect groups who might feel like this doesn't really apply to them.
How so?
Well, like if my kids are fully grown and living in another state, or if I've never had kids to begin with, I'm not exactly functioning as a live-in role model. Does this security camera concept really matter for, say, an empty nester?
Oh, it matters immensely. And Sean specifically targeted that demographic. The youth at Harmony are actively observing the adults in their community ecosystem.
Everywhere they go.
Everywhere. They see you interacting with the cashier at the grocery store. They see how you manage frustration in the church parking lot.
Oh man, the parking lot.
Right. And they are the ones serving your table at the local restaurant. The way you tip, the way you speak to them when your order is wrong, they are absorbing that data.
Wow, yeah.
You are contributing to the environment that is shaping their view of what a Christian looks like, whether you realize you're on camera or not.
They are absorbing our unintentional habits just as much as our intentional lessons. And Sean illustrated this with that story about his almost 3-year-old daughter, Oakley.
Oh, Oakley. She has developed this highly specific, articulate attitude.
Yes, she started deploying phrases like, what the heck, and actually.
With the exact sarcastic inflection of an adult.
Yes. And at first, it's funny, right? She crosses her eyes at Sean's wife and everyone laughs. But then Sean had this sobering realization, like, she is just a mirror.
Yeah, he admitted that the actually habit is 100% his own conversational tic coming out in her.
It's so convicting. Because if a toddler can perfectly replicate a casual catchphrase and a sarcastic tone of voice, the implications for spiritual development are staggering.
They really are. They are mimicking our baseline patience, our default grace, our chronic stress. Children simply do not possess the cognitive framework to separate a parent's stated theology from a parent's lived reaction.
That's huge.
Yeah, to a child, your reaction is your theology.
Man, if kids are constantly watching our unpolished, unguarded moments, we are forced to take a brutal inventory of how we react when the pressure is on.
Which leads directly into the illustration Sean did on stage with a bucket of water.
Right. He had John come up and hold the microphone while Sean manipulated this huge bucket.
And the water inside represented our inputs, like every single thing we take into our lives.
The human brain has a finite capacity, and we are constantly filling it. So the water represents the hours spent scrolling social media, the political talk radio we listen to on the commute, the television we binge.
But also the positive inputs, right?
Exactly. The time we spend in prayer, engaging with scripture, or gathering with our connect groups, everything swirls together in that bucket, forming our internal baseline.
And then Sean asked us to imagine that our bucket is completely full to the brim. And then, well, life hits you right between the eyes.
Yeah, you get cut off in traffic. Or, he used this example, you just finished spending an hour mopping the kitchen floor, and your kid drops a giant cup of sticky juice right in the middle of it.
The worst.
The absolute worst. When you get bumped, the water sloshes out.
The critical question becomes, what exactly is sloshing out?
Okay, wait, I have to stop you there, because I was sitting in the service thinking about this. Here's where it gets really interesting.
Okay, go for it.
My pushback is, if I just spend an hour mopping and someone ruins it in 2 seconds, my anger in that moment is a direct one-to-one result of the spilled juice. Isn't it normal to just snap because of the pressure of the moment?
I mean, we all feel that way, but the idea that the event creates the emotion is actually the most common illusion we live under. Yeah, we blame the external bump for the internal spill. But Sean delivered what was arguably the crux of the entire sermon here. He said, pressure doesn't create what's in the bucket. Pressure reveals what's in your bucket.
Wow. Pressure reveals it.
Exactly. The spilled juice did not manufacture anger out of thin air. It simply bumped a container that was already at capacity with stress, exhaustion, or impatience.
That makes a lot of sense.
Right. If your internal bucket is filled entirely with social media outrage and chronic anxiety, that is precisely what will spill onto your kitchen floor when you are startled.
But conversely, if you have been actively displacing that anxiety with gratitude, prayer, the word of God, grace is what will slosh out when the waiter brings you the wrong food.
Exactly. So it's essentially like a tea bag.
Oh, I love this analogy.
You don't actually know what flavor the tea bag is until you drop it in boiling hot water.
Right.
The hot water doesn't create the Earl Grey flavor. The extreme heat just forces whatever is already inside the bag to seep out into the environment.
That is a perfect way to conceptualize it. The boiling water merely accelerates the revelation of what was hidden inside the bag all along.
Yeah. And when we apply this to the chain of faith Sean was talking about, it means the youth at Harmony are learning about Christianity from our leaks.
Wow, our leaks.
Yeah, they aren't learning from the pristine, untouched tea bag sitting perfectly still in its packaging on a Sunday morning. They're learning the flavor of our faith from what seeps out of us on a chaotic, stressful Wednesday evening.
That is so challenging to think about, because if we accept that we are constantly leaking onto the next generation, the immediate problem becomes, well, how do we change what's in our bucket?
Right, because if we are surrounded by stressful inputs, we can't filter it all out in isolation. We need structural help to manage what we absorb.
Which brings us to how the early church solved this exact problem of isolation and discipleship. Sean laid out a structural blueprint by taking us to the book of Acts.
Yeah, he focused on the historical dynamic between three distinct men, Barnabas, Paul, and Timothy. To truly grasp the weight of this model, we have to look at the severe friction present in the early biblical ecosystem. Because today we hear the name Paul and immediately think of the apostle who wrote half the New Testament.
We just view him as a hero.
Exactly.
But the early church did not view him as a hero. They knew him as Saul, and Saul was a terrifying figure. He wasn't just like a skeptic asking difficult questions. He was actively hunting, imprisoning, and orchestrating the execution of Christians.
Right. So when Saul experienced his miraculous conversion on the road to Damascus and suddenly wanted to integrate into the Christian community in Jerusalem, the disciples were understandably terrified.
I would be too.
They assumed it was an elaborate trap to flesh them out. The early church had zero incentive to trust this man.
And this is where Barnabas changes history. Because Barnabas was an established, highly respected leader in the early church, he possessed immense social capital.
Yeah, he was trusted.
He didn't just casually introduce Paul to the group. Barnabas put his own reputation and honestly his physical safety on the line to vouch for a former killer.
He poured his time, his credibility, and his wisdom into Paul when every instinct of the community was to reject him.
And that investment fundamentally altered the contents of Paul's bucket. He absorbed Barnabas' grace and teaching.
And then years later, Paul utilized that exact same mechanism to invest in a young, timid believer named Timothy.
The chain of faith in action.
Exactly. Paul walked alongside Timothy, correcting him, encouraging him, and giving him a theological foundation until Timothy became a formidable leader in his own right. The mechanism of survival for the early church wasn't just mass sermons. It was this literal chain of relational investment. Barnabas to Paul, Paul to Timothy.
And Sean tied this historical model to Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 12. A cord of three strands is not easily broken.
Right.
He joked about how we typically only hear that verse at weddings when a couple is braiding a rope or lighting a unity candle.
Always at weddings.
Always. But the original wisdom applies perfectly to discipleship. A single strand of faith snaps under the pressure of culture. But woven together, it possesses incredible tensile strength.
Yeah. And Sean challenged us to build this three-part model into our own lives. He said we need a Barnabas, a group of Pauls, and a Timothy.
So what does this all mean for us at Harmony? Let's break down the mechanics of each strand.
Sure. So a Barnabas is someone further along in the journey than you are, someone older, wiser, who has navigated the challenges you are currently facing and is actively pouring their experience into your bucket.
Okay, got it.
Your group of Pauls are your peers. They are the people in the trenches with you, providing lateral accountability and shared experience.
Right.
And a Timothy is someone behind you, someone younger in age or spiritual maturity that you are intentionally pulling forward.
Okay, so honestly, I can hear people in our Connect groups doing the mental math on this and feeling completely overwhelmed.
Oh, for sure.
Like, I barely have the bandwidth to get my kids to soccer practice, cook dinner, and keep my boss happy. And now Sean says I need to recruit an entire spiritual board of directors.
Right, it sounds like a lot.
Finding all three sounds like a full-time job. Is this practical for a regular church member?
The friction you are feeling is real. But it's based on a misunderstanding of what Sean is asking. This isn't about adding four new calendar appointments to your week.
Okay, good.
It's about weaving a natural safety net, using the threads that already exist in your environment. You don't have to launch a nationwide search for a group of Pauls.
Yeah.
They're likely the people sitting across from you in your Connect group this week.
That makes it a lot more doable.
Right. And your Barnabas might simply be an older couple at Harmony that you invite to coffee once a month. Your Timothy could be the middle schooler you make a point to check in with for 5 minutes every Sunday in the lobby.
So it's not a rigid curriculum.
No, it's a woven relationship. Sean's challenge for the church is simply an audit. Look at your current life and identify which of those three links is missing right now.
Okay, so moving from the theoretical structure of those three strands to the physical reality of our church, Sean spelled out exactly how we can step into this story at Harmony.
Practical opportunities.
Yes. He analyzed several immediate avenues for finding a Timothy. The first major one is coming up on May 31st, Family Fifth Sunday.
Oh, this is going to be great. The sociological brilliance of Family Fifth Sunday is that it removes the artificial barrier between the generations.
Right.
On May 31st, the kids and teens won't be in their separate environments. They are joining the adults in the main worship service.
And Sean framed this not as a logistical shift, but as a deliberate challenge to the adults. He warned us that when those kids walk into the sanctuary, they are going to be watching.
They're turning the security cameras on.
Exactly. They are going to observe how the adults engage with the music. Are you singing or are you looking around? When the sermon starts, are you opening your Bible or are you subtly scrolling through social media?
They're utilizing that exact hour to learn what adult faith actually looks like in practice.
But the weight of being watched extends far beyond one Sunday a month. Sean highlighted the massive infrastructure of discipleship happening in the kids and student ministries.
Yeah, the volunteers working with the birth through fifth grade kids during the first and second services are not operating a glorified babysitting service.
No, not at all.
They are actively translating the gospel into a language those kids can comprehend.
And the same intense investment is happening with the 6th through 12th graders. They have their own service times, a youth worship team, small groups. Running an operation of that scale requires a small army.
Yes, it does.
Sean made that hilarious point about Kristen, our kids' ministry director, essentially begging for 11 volunteers.
It's the 11.
Because the sheer volume of kids coming through the doors right now is just staggering.
But the most crucial distinction Sean made during this segment was a linguistic one. In modern church culture, we frequently use the phrase finding a place to serve.
Right.
And it implies fulfilling a functional duty, like setting up chairs, directing traffic in the parking lot, or handing out bulletins. It feels very transactional.
Yeah, it does. But Sean refused to use that framing for the next generation. He said these aren't just places to serve or check boxes. These are invitations to step into someone's story.
I love that phrase. Step into someone's story.
Handing out goldfish to a second grader or sitting in a circle with a group of eighth graders isn't a task. You are introducing a stable adult presence into a season of human development that is historically volatile and chaotic.
Absolutely.
And he cut off the primary excuse people use to avoid this. He said, you don't need a theology degree. You don't need to have your own life perfectly managed. You just have to show up, point them to Jesus, and be willing to walk through the friction with them.
And the power of simply showing up was best illustrated by the senior mentoring program Sean detailed.
Oh, this is so cool.
Harmony's goal is to pair an individual adult or a married couple with every single high school senior graduating this year. They are asking those adults to commit to a one-year timeline.
The mechanics of this are so simple, but so deeply meaningful. You aren't acting as their parent. You are simply a Barnabas figure who commits to praying for them, sending them a text, and checking in on them for 12 months.
Because when an 18-year-old leaves home for college or enters the workforce, the frequency of their parents' voices often gets tuned out as they seek independence.
Right.
But the voice of a mentor, an adult who has no biological obligation to care about them but chooses to anyway, that cuts through the noise.
It provides a sociological tether that prevents them from drifting into isolation when they hit their first major crisis of faith or identity away from home.
Which brings us to Sean's ultimate challenge for you this week. It isn't just a hypothetical thought experiment about your tea bag or your three strands. It culminates in a literal physical action.
The blue cards.
Yes, the blue cards located in the seat backs of our chairs.
The immediate call to action was to grab that blue card, check the specific box that says, help me find my place to serve, and drop it in the black boxes by the doors on your way out. Sean summarized the biblical mandate perfectly. The question for a believer is, never if you are called to invest in the next generation.
Right.
The instruction is already written in Deuteronomy and modeled in Acts. The only question on the table is where you are going to step in.
Exactly. And before you head to your Connect group meeting this week, I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over.
Mm-hmm.
We've spent a lot of time analyzing the necessity of finding a Timothy to pour into so that the next generation survives.
Yeah.
But what if the physical act of pouring into a Timothy is actually the very mechanism that refills your own bucket?
Oh.
We often treat mentorship as a drain on our limited resources, you know, a withdrawal from an already depleted account. But think about the bucket of your own life right now. What if giving your faith away, explaining it to a middle schooler, or texting a terrified college freshman is the only way to keep your own faith from going stagnant? If a Timothy at Harmony were to only learn about faith from the things that spill out of your bucket when you are stressed, what exact version of faith would they be inheriting? Are you okay with that? Or is it time to change what you're pouring in?
Man, because if the water in the bucket just sits there, it eventually spoils. We have to pour it out to make room for fresh water to come in. Harmony family, take these concepts into your Connect groups this week. Analyze your own buckets. Be honest about the flavor of the tea that is leaking out of you under pressure. And take the leap to build those three strands. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive into Sean's message. We wish you an amazing, honest, and fruitful discussion at your Connect group this week. We'll see you next time.